Welcome to this episode of the Swim Swam Podcast. I'm today's host, Coleman Hodges, and joining us today, we have Catherine McLean. She is a master's in social work, master's in business administration, and the program and partnerships director of We Ride Together. We Ride Together is a nonprofit organization created to cast light upon the endemic issue of sexual abuse in youth and amateur sports. Their mission is to make the youth and amateur sport environment safer for all athletes. Catherine, thank you so much for sitting down with us today. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, Coleman. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast. I'm so excited to be here today. I'm a simple man. Don't want a
I'm really excited to speak with you and specifically to speak with you about a blog post you made on We Ride Together, the title of which was Identify Healthy and Unhealthy Relationship Dynamics Between Coaches and Athletes, which is something that if you've been around any form of swim team, any form of athletic team, especially at the youth level, you know that you've probably experienced both of these, both healthy and unhealthy behaviors and dynamics between coaches and athletes. So first off, I want to get a little background on you, Catherine. What's your background in sport? And also, how did you become involved with We Ride Together, who is tackling a very big task in trying to, alleviate or stop sexual abuse within youth sports?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for that introduction. I actually grew up swimming, playing soccer, volleyball, rowing, you name it. I was always outside in the pool, on the field, etc. I love sports, and that's one of the main reasons that led me to We Ride Together. But as an adult, I've competed in open water swimming and triathlon, and so I'm still heavily invested in the world of swimming and other sports at large. So this job is a perfect fit for me. My background is as a social worker in community mental health. And then I realized all of the macro level problems that our society is facing and went and got my business degree to kind of make some changes in the entrepreneurial and nonprofit space, which just poised me well for this position here. And now We Ride Together is on its, multi-year plan now in all sports and bringing this mission and goal to make sports safer and healthy for all athletes.
So first off, thank you. Thank you for being a part of this organization, and thank you for doing what you're doing to make swimming and for all sports a safer place from Swim Swam to you. I'm excited to just have this conversation and to know you exist and to know that there are people out there who are actively working to make sports safe. Oh. So with that, go ahead.
Oh, no, just thank you. We really appreciate, spreading this message. And we really believe that we all play a role in ending abuse in sport, and we all play a role in these prevention practices. So thank you.
Yeah. And if you're interested in We Ride Together, if you want to stop in the podcast, you can go to weridetogether.today to check out their website. That's weridetogether.today. I'm also going to link this specific article in the description below, so you can check out how to identify healthy and unhealthy relationship dynamics between coaches and athletes, written by Catherine McLean. And that's what we're going to discuss today. So diving right into this, this was a great blog post, and my favorite part about this is the charts, which were, if you're watching on YouTube, we're going to post them right now, and then Catherine's going to kind of dive into them. But you made two charts. One is all about healthy relationship dynamics between athletes and coaches, and one is about unhealthy relationship dynamics between athletes and coaches. It's kind of scary how the line is so fine, right, between these two sometimes. So when you went about making these charts and writing this post, what went into it for you, and how were you able to decipher and draw the line, right, between healthy and unhealthy relationship dynamics?
No, that's a great question. Thank you for asking. These CAR diagrams, these coach-athlete relationship dynamic wheels that we refer to them as, have been really helpful in teasing out what that line is, because that's often a very common question that I get and our team gets is, well, is it tough coaching? Is it abuse? Is it tough love? Is it just being disciplined? Or where's that line? And it's kind of that question mark in your head about that unfunny feeling of something just didn't quite sit right. And so people are wondering, you know, how can I really discern? How can I tell? And so we decided to create these diagrams as a delineation between what is healthy and what is unhealthy. And the rule of thumb that we came up with was, is the relationship between the coach and the athlete one based off of care and respect, or is it one based off of power and control? And separating it from there into the different pie slices or pizza slices, if you will, into the different categories of behavioral interaction, it can help individuals kind of see an example that they might experience in the pool, and then match, oh, hey, where did this line up? Is this on the care and respect wheel, or is this more in line with things that I'm seeing in the power and control wheel? And so I can break down an example or something and walk through it. I think that's kind of the best way to think about these charts and how we reverse engineered to make them. So with the care and support wheel, for example, first, you would think, okay, my coach gave me really great feedback after my last race. They told me, you know, a few things that I did great, but my timing off the block just wasn't awesome. I've had faster starts. And so that would be an example of, you know, respect, giving that positive feedback. Their communication is clear. People are being fair. They're being responsible. They're having the athlete's best interest at heart about, you know, wanting to do better, focusing on the positive, but having that constructive feedback. Versus an example about power and control would be, you know, less appropriate would be, you know, what the heck were you doing with that start? That was horrible. That whole race was bad. Being really dismissive and minimizing the good parts and not giving any constructive feedback. Oh, well, this tiny bit we can work on next practice or something like that. And so there's two different examples of how a coach responded to an example in sport. One, more power and control, one, care and respect. And this can be used for many different examples, not just communication.
So my immediate follow-up is going to that tough coaching, right? Or the tough love approach that I think certainly many swim coaches will take and say, well, it's in your best interest if I use anger or intimidation to motivate you, right? If I yell at you on a pool deck, because that's motivation, and in the end, that's going to lead you to better times or a better result. And I think we see that a lot, especially. I feel like that's glorified in many cases because it leads to those results that are, you know, winning a gold medal or winning an event, going a best time. I feel like those motivation tactics can often push athletes to train harder. Mm-hmm. But again, can you break down how you draw the line of it's not okay to use certain anger, yelling, to use certain motivation tactics, even if that might yield a better result?
Right. And we get that question a lot. And, you know, it's a lot, well, I was coached that way, or this is what helped me get to as far as I have, or this is the way it's always been done, or tough love does work, or hard coaching does work. And it's not about athletes being too sensitive. It's not about athletes not wanting to work hard. It's not about that it's just always been done that way and that's the cultural norm. But is it necessary? No. Is it dangerous? Yes. And does it always elicit high performance? No. And the evidence for that, Project Play with the Aspen Institute, they're an incredible leader in the area about developing knowledge and healthy communities in sports, from grassroots to NGBs. And in their youth sports playbook, they asked youth players, you know, what's the most fun element of sport? And they listed second to trying their best is when coaches treat players with respect. 48th on that priority list was winning. And so there's just a mismatch between the coaching styles and the experience that athletes are truly wanting. Athletes want their coaches to have their best interest at heart. And when we are treated with that care and support, our mental health and physical health also improves. It makes the team work better. It improves the culture. And in my experience, and what we've seen, is that performance actually improves when positive coaching tactics are employed versus anger and fear as fuel, that's actually not motivating and disempowers athletes versus empowers them. Mm.
It's a strange realization. Just for me, looking at so many different coaching, looking back at so many different coaching experiences that I've had and I've witnessed, because I think you're often sold the idea that your coach has your best interest mm-hmm. in mind. So whatever they do, it's appropriate because they have your best interest in mind. When in reality, that might not be the case. And I feel like even many coaches can trick themselves into thinking, I have their best interests, so I can kind of do whatever I need to get them to the place that I think they need to be because I have their best interests in mind.
Right. And that connects right back to the wheels and to those diagrams that we were talking about just a minute ago. And it's thinking more holistically about the athlete as a whole person and not just their next IM time, or if they're going to make it to regionals or that kind of thing. It's what's really in their best interest as a whole person, and that equating to their athletic prowess and their accomplishments in swimming at large. And so thinking, you know, let's go in and assume that coaches do have our best interest. Let's assume the best intent, but then let's check. How does it sit? Did them throwing water bottles, pool boys, and kickboards at me when I didn't make my last interval, was that really having my best interest at heart to help me swim faster? Or is there another way that they can have my best interest improving my technique and my skills and my speed in a way that's more uplifting and building rather than scary and dangerous?
When you say it like that, it sounds so simple. I think you would think that it is, but then you get in these situations where, again, I think a lot of coaches can just be illusioned by the fact that, I'm doing this, or they justify a lot of their actions because they think it will make them a better athlete no matter what. And so that they can justify a lot of actions that aren't actually benefiting the whole person. They might just benefit them in the short run.
Right. Right. And unfortunately that impacts the team, that impacts the culture, that reinforces negative behavior. It gives passive permission to these abusive tendencies, and it's not what kids want. It's ethically negligent. It's fiscally also irresponsible, and it's unfortunate because every day I see a headline of a new case of abuse in sport, and it's just really sad because what you said, it's these prevention ideas and practices that they are simple, and it actually is easy to treat people with care and respect and support. It actually is the easier route.
So if you were going to sit down with a group of youth coaches and say, hey, maybe here are some easy tips for coaching the whole person and approaching that and approaching your coaching with care and support versus power and control. Again, and we can just take right from the wheel here, but what are some easy tips that you would point them in the direction of, hey, this is how you can maybe reflect as a coach and be a little bit more aware of your actions and then make more pointed decisions about how you're going to coach these youths moving forward?
Certainly. Yes. I mean, I would first just remind these coaches that you can still be direct. You can still have high discipline and push hard workouts and have high expectations and still deliver results this way. But my first piece of advice would be take a peek at these diagrams, take a look at the wheel and look at the different examples and, you know, reflect on your last swim practice. Was your communication building on success, and was it building on joy? Was it from a strengths-based perspective, or, you know, was it not? Was it pressuring? Was it rude? Was it minimizing? Was it blaming? And so adding that reflection piece for coaches, I think, is a great way to increase awareness of our behavior, because sometimes we might not even know that what we're doing is inappropriate. Perhaps it's just been normalized or an expectation or norm, but we have to take a minute and check ourselves. I think another thing coaches can do is communicate with their athletes and with parents and ask for feedback about what's working and what's not working in forms of, you know, perhaps consequences for if certain things aren't met or different things. But I think adding that reflection and adding feedback are great ways to improve, as well as increasing your education and awareness. So there's a ton of great mental health training resources and other training on prevention that coaches can take to better support their athletes and to better support their coaching techniques as well.
I spoke with someone a while back about positive coaching as well, and he spoke a lot about the coaches having communication with the parents of the athletes, mm-hmm. not just of the athletes, and forming relationships with them so that they can have that line of feedback as well of, as you said, what's working for this athlete, not just from the athlete, but from the parent of the athlete, mm-hmm. who probably knows the athlete better than anyone else, as well as the communication of coach to athlete. And I feel like that is something that, especially at the youth level, coaches will stray away from, or that's maybe not encouraged, especially when parents can come at the coaches from a perspective of hostility, or from a place of hostility or anger, or frustration or confusion. Mm-hmm. And the more you open up that pipeline of communication between the parent and the coach, I think the more trust you build there, and then the better relationship you're going to have with the athlete, because you get a better understanding of where they're coming from, what their home life is like, and what they're going to respond to.
Definitely. It's that holistic perspective. And when we get everyone involved and increase this communication, it makes our interactions more transparent and more accountable, which is a great rule of thumb for proactive prevention. And, you know, we want to keep things in plain sight, not behind closed doors. We want to have our communication on group texts, you know, not on individual messaging where things could be inappropriate or siloed. And so these approaches about building community and building relationship, you know, support the athlete at large in tenfold.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I really liked hearing that. Because again, I feel like that is when you say it, it's like, oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense, but it's not necessarily something that happens a lot. So I, again, approaching it holistically, and it's one conversation I have a lot is that, you know, it takes a lot of education, for example, or you have to jump through a lot of hoops to become a school teacher, right? Mm-hmm. To become a youth sport coach, there's essentially, in a lot of cases, you do not need credentials of any kind, right? And in one sense, it's like, okay, it makes it very accessible, and that opens opportunities for people. But in another sense, it's like, these are still teachers, right? These are still people working with kids, having a very big influence on them. In some cases, they spend more time with them than anyone else during the day, any other authority figure during the day, even their parents. And they, you know, have very few credentials. They may have very few credentials. And so it can be a little, when I think about that, it makes me take a step back, and it's like, okay, I understand why that's the case. But at the same time, I think that's just more of a reason of why we should keep having conversations like this and encourage communication and openness so that everyone knows what's happening. Because, again, I feel like it very quickly it can become a case of coaches thinking they have the athlete's best interest in mind, but then taking it in a direction, taking training or things outside of training in a direction that becomes unhealthy very quickly.
I couldn't have said it better myself, and I'm very pro sport and want everyone to have access to sports. But like you said, there's no barrier to entry for being a coach in a lot of areas. So there's no standardization of credentialing or even background checks. And we know that background checks don't catch everything, because predators on average offend on 120 victims before they're caught. And so people might not even have a record and be able to coach. And so one thing that we encourage all members of sporting communities is four things to know about your coach. And that's checking their reputation. That's getting that background check and, you know, making sure that there's checks and balances so that they're not siloed, doing their own things, but have that training and are getting those credentials, to making sure that we're leaving our kids and athletes in safe hands, because sport should be a place where we can all grow and play and learn and develop. And we want to make sure that it is that.
Yeah. As you mentioned before, you know, you're a lifelong athlete. You're still competing today. What is it that you enjoy about sport? And I mean, obviously you've made it your career to try to make youth sports, a better place, a safer place, a more accessible place for everyone. What is it that you enjoy about it that not only you're still an athlete today, but again, you're also an advocate for making sport more enjoyable for everyone?
I mean, some of my best memories in my life are from sports. And I think sports have made me the woman that I am today, with my work ethic, with my inner strength and mental strength, let alone physical strength that comes and goes. But I think, you know, sports can make you who you are. You learn team building, you learn skills, you learn resilience. And it's a beautiful way to engage with community and practice setting goals and working towards things and fumbling and learning new skills. And I think that there's such a joy and adventure in that. And, you know, my role in being an ally and an advocate for individuals, you know, right now in the athletic spaces to, you know, prevent abuse, is so that everyone can have that experience in their sport, regardless of what sport they choose or if it's swimming or not. Highly recommend the swimming. But I believe that sports, those skills really translate into who you are as a whole person in your whole life and can really set you up for success. And I hope that all can have a great experience.
So I guess one big question I have that I would think maybe a lot of people might have, or a situation that might come up is, you know, if I'm a high school athlete, high school swimmer specifically, and I'm looking at colleges, you know, or I'm a coach and I'm trying to push my athletes to be able to put themselves in a position to compete in college, you know, I think a lot of times these questionable behaviors or this dynamic of care and support versus power and control, you see a lot of it when people are trying to push athletes to be the very best that they can be. And again, more specifically, if I'm trying to get into the best college or the best swim team at a college that I can, how do you find a good balance of pushing an athlete as a coach to try to get them to where they want to go after they leave me, mm-hmm. And after they leave youth sports, but doing so in a way that is healthy for them, and again, that they can feel a sense of accomplishment and personal satisfaction with.
Yeah, I think my tip here for coaches would be to be really critically aware of the power imbalances that are prevalent in all sports. But in this situation that you bring up, you know, these coaches have that referential power, that expert power, that informational power in which they can help their athlete, you know, build those skills, or they might have a contact at a certain program, or they could be the be all end all coach that can help you get to the next level and that kind of thing. And so for coaches to understand that level of influence and impact and privilege and authority that they have over the athlete that they're working with, and recognizing, you know, with that level of engagement and that pressure that, when someone's experiencing that power imbalance, they're going to experience not as much choice in what they're going to be able to do, that they might feel pressured to do certain things because they might see that's their only way, or that this person has so much power and influence, so I have to do what they say. So when there's not that balance of power, I think it's really critical that the coach and the athlete are aware of that, and then get on the same team about, you know, bringing that communication back. What are our goals? What are we willing to do to get there? And coaches, again, can still be incredibly impactful and push their athletes hard without being verbally abusive, emotionally abusive, sexually abusive. That I've had many a coach help me excel, and seen many friends get very far in their sports with positive coaching, that can and does exist.
Yeah, just listening to you say that, like, I can think of examples and times where coaches are being disciplined, right, versus being shameful about an athlete's choice to have a cookie after dinner, right, or spend 5 minutes stretching, or do make any of these choices that kind of add up to being the best athlete that they can be, right? And I think it's important as coaches to, like you said, when there's that power imbalance, it's very good for both coaches and athletes to be aware of it, but for also the coaches to maybe do what they can to make it more balanced, to give the athletes the choices that present them with those choices, make sure they're very aware of what it takes to succeed, but not push them in a way that's demeaning, that's, you know, abusive, to make those decisions, but make sure that they're choosing it. Because I think, especially in swimming, we see a lot of athletes burn out by the time they get to college, and then not have the best experience they maybe could have in college because swimming is an exhaustive sport in and of itself without coaches, yes, being buttheads. And so getting athletes to a point where they still really love the sport and they feel like they're choosing to do it moving forward rather than being forced to do it, being pressured to do it, or feeling like this is just what I have to do.
Exactly. Exactly. That empowers athletes. It puts them in the driver's seat of their own experience. And, you know, sports are life, but they're a part of life. And I think we have to remember that sometimes too. And I'll just have to say this is, you know, if you are an athlete with a coach that is pressuring you, or it feels like it's the only option, that there are other options, there are other teams out there, and there are still ways to make it to the highest level with positive coach-athlete relationship dynamics. That does exist. That is possible.
Yeah. I don't know who said the phrase, winning isn't everything, it's the only thing. But I think that might be my least favorite phrase I've ever heard. And I think my philosophy around sports is pretty much the exact opposite. Like you said, sports can be everything, especially for a young athlete. And it can be a huge indicator of identity. But I also think it's very good, especially as a coach where you have a lot of this power, to make sure that the athlete has other avenues of identity. And again, making sure that if they're choosing to go all in on a sport, that it's their choice and not, certainly not the coach's choice, and hopefully not the parents' choice, but sometimes a coach doesn't have as much authority in that realm.
I agree with all of that. And then it's up to the athlete, you know, what they want to do and what they want to sign on for, and then getting there in a healthy way, because that's certainly possible when everyone's on the same page. And like you said, when everyone is aware of that power and balance, and it is possible to have safe and healthy and high performance sport.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down and chat with us about this today. It's a great topic to air out, and I think just to have more conversations about, to get out there so that we are talking about it. So hopefully we see some change in our sport for the better. But again, just thank you for taking the time to sit down and talk. Any parting thoughts for our audience before we sign off today?
Oh, this has been such a pleasure. And I would just say, if you'd like to learn more or continue this conversation, please visit our blog, visit our resources. If you want to learn more, my contact information is all over our website as well. So we're happy to continue this conversation with anyone that would like to be involved.
And once again, that is at weridetogether.today. Go check them out. They're a nonprofit, and they're fighting for a great cause.
Thanks so much, Coleman.
You've been listening to the Swim Swam Podcast. Stay tuned for new episodes every week. You can take Swim Swam Podcast on the go by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. Look for links in the description below, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more videos as well.